From the land of Grand University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 30th day of May 2019. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker. He's at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. A bit later in the program, we'll catch up on the cash grain market and check in on the farming situation in Windsor, Illinois, with AgMarket.net's Matt Bennett. And then as we close out our time together, we'll take a look at the weather forecast with Mike Tenorum at T-Storm Weather in Chicago. Oh, and along the way today, I'll update you on all the trade and agricultural news from across the planet right here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media, Public Radio for the farming world at willag.org. That's willag.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let's take a look at what happened in the world of agricultural futures now. We're joined by Dan Zwicker. He's at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Good afternoon to you, Dan. Thanks for being with us. It's a nice little giddy-up day in Chicago, though. If you don't have a crop in the ground, I don't suppose it matters much. Or if you have some of it sold too early, that might not be too great either.
No, unfortunately, as much as I like to be bullish, probably this is one of those rallies that's kind of a double-edged sword. It's fun to watch the market go up, but in a case like what we're seeing in agriculture, a higher market here tells you that somebody's getting hurt pretty bad. And, I mean, you can look at the planting progress numbers that were released on Monday, or I guess Tuesday, since we had a holiday weekend. But and what's probably going to be released Monday afternoon, and we're going to see how bad things are in the Corn Belt. But this is a generational lesson for a lot of people, market advisors, farmers, the older millennials, the younger Gen Xers, they're all being taught a lesson that the baby boomers were all taught in 1973, 74, 1980, 83, 95, 96. So this is going to go down in the books. Everybody's going to remember this one for many years, and all of their marketing decisions that they make from this point forward is all going to have a scar on those decisions. They will make different type of decisions, decisions that they thought were easy. They're going to find out are not easy, because agriculture is a cyclical business. And while we've had a string of good crops, it was just a matter of time that we were going to have a short crop, because that's the way the history of agriculture works when you rely on Mother Nature and weather cycles and all that. The only thing I can say, you know, really at this point is upside potential. I can give everybody some targets that the technical guys are looking at to try to figure out the fundamentals of this market are extremely difficult. And I'm not too sure we're going to know what the fundamentals really are on the supply side until we get probably the combines rolling. I mean, I think USDA's acreage numbers that they're going to issue here at the end of June, their June crop report, they might as well just cancel it, because it ain't gonna tell us anything on new crop. I guess they can probably tell us a balance sheet on old crop, but the new crop prospects are going to alter the old crop balance sheet, because eventually, and I think you're starting to see it take place, is that when you're staring down the barrel of a short crop, all of a sudden the old crop supplies become more valuable. And that's what we're going to see here. The end users are probably been kind of lackluster, not worried too much about supplies, because, oh, we got all this old stuff around. But now they're beginning to look at things and say, you know, this corn crop could be a whole lot shorter than what everybody thought it was going to be. And if you're not planting corn, you're not planting soybeans either. So the soybean crop, all of a sudden, this billion bushel carryover that we've been looking at could shrink significantly. And then what happens if South America decides to have a bad crop next year? All of a sudden, your supply-demand balance sheets around the world change in a hurry. For those that, you know, have crop growing that's looking at targets and that, I mean, the chart interpretation here on the lead futures chart back in 2016 and 2017, the lead option futures, I guess it was 15 and 16, the lead option futures had a high in the 443, 444 area. This week's high in July futures is right at 440. So we're knocking on the upper end of this trading range between 320 and 440 that we've had basically since 2014. We start busting above that mid-40s, 445, 450. Then all of a sudden that clears out an opening for corn to try to go back and maybe challenge the 14 high, which is up there around the, let's see, it's going to be somewhere around 517, 520 area. I suppose that's going to be the next target area. If we can take the lead futures through this 450 area. You look at December corn. Well, I'll just stay with lead futures because it's going to eventually, it may end up being the September contract. I don't know which contract's going to be the one that screams higher. But I mentioned this here a week ago or a couple weeks ago, a 50% retracement back to the 12 high takes us to 580. So that's been the number I've been talking about, a 580. And of course, you picked up on that yesterday. Listen to 580 radio, AM 580 radio, talking about 584.
That was off your Twitter account, yes.
Yeah, off the Twitter account. So, but I think those are the targets, I guess, for corn. And nobody wants to don't get too bearish these beans either, because, like I said, if we're not planting corn, we're not planting soybeans either. And all of a sudden, we're looking at maybe different yield structure, not only in corn, we're looking at different yield structure maybe on soybeans. And soybean things, probably what you want to look at is probably maybe like a 38% retracement back to the 12 high. And that puts your front months somewhere around 949 or 950. A 62% retracement. Soybeans have a tendency to go to either 38 or 62. A 62% retracement could take you back to 1050 beans. And probably there's not one soul a month ago ever thought beans would ever get to 1050. And I'm not saying they're going to get there, but that's what the retracement levels would at least are targets anyway.
Can I look a little further out with you? Because I think when I think about this longer term, so we don't do, let's say we don't plant the corn acres and they go prevent plant or just are abandoned, whatever happened, they're going to go, if they go prevent plant, they don't go to beans, but we do plant soybeans. And next year, we've got a whale of a corn acreage in front of us, it appears.
Yeah.
And I don't know what that does to the marketplace.
Well, the market, I mean, it's going to limit the 2020 price strength is what it's going to limit. It's because people are going to anticipate that. If this 2019 corn crop goes to $5 or $5.50 or whatever that number might be, everybody's going to anticipate that next year we're going to have a huge corn crop, or at least acres. The intentions are going to be high is because so much of this corn crop may end up being in a prevent plant situation. It kind of reminds me of 1983. Of course, we had a set aside in 83 that basically took half the acres out of production, and then we had a drought on top of it. So then by 84, you had massive acreage increases, and then 84 was a good crop year. And, you know, prices just went right into the tank. Longer term, what I think this is the 1980 rally of this cycle. In 1980, we had a good challenge of those 73, 74 high points that we put in the marketplace during the Japanese buying of soybean meal, and of course we ended up with an embargo on that. And then in 74, we had a late spring, wet late spring, hot dry summer, and then an early frost. So corn went to $4 in 1974, in October 1974. And then, 6 years later, we came back and did a good solid run at those highs. Corn went to 396. December corn topped out at 396 in 1980. And I think soybeans maybe went to 950 or 1050, which were big numbers back then in the 70s. And then, of course, then the 81 and 82 crop years, we had big crop years. So prices went sharply lower. Grain reserves were starting to build up. And then we had the 83 pick program. And then, of course, you could almost point out when we were going to have a weather problem is when USDA had set-aside acres. And then we had the drought.
The whole farm set-aside, yes.
And then we had the drought on top of the whole farm set-aside in 83. And then, of course, these corn only went to 375 then, or 377. It never did get to $4. So I think this is a return. This is the 1980. So at some point in time, if I'm halfway, in the ballpark with something like that, yes, the guy's going to have to look real hard at selling the 2020 crop and 2021 crop. But the market's not going to allow you to sell it. It's going to be at a big discount, and they're not going to look attractive. They're not going to look attractive prices.
All right. Hey, thanks so much. We'll talk with you again next week. I appreciate it a lot.
All right. Very well, Todd.
That is Dan Zwicker. He's with Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. In today's agricultural news, Canada this week introduced its bill to implement the new NAFTA. That's what Canada actually calls it. But there is still little momentum stateside in getting that pact through Congress. The United States calls it the USMCA. House Democrats say they won't be rushed by Canada's move. A trip to Mexico City for a bipartisan bicameral group of congressional aides next week signals adherence to a timeline Speaker Nancy Pelosi set out last month that she wants to see how Mexico implements its recently passed labor reform law before Congress in the United States considers USMCA. The aides will meet with Mexican officials about the ratification process and labor changes. Mexico has yet to put forward a plan for how it will pay for reforms like the addition of labor inspectors and creation of new structures to handle labor disputes and monitor unions. Well, Vice President Mike Pence is in Ottawa today. The Vice President says that the U.S.-Canadian relationship has never been stronger, less than a year after a trade tiff had chilled the allies' historically warm ties. Pence was in the Canadian capital hoping to build momentum to pass a new trade deal with Canada and Mexico. A new trade deal was signed in November by the leaders of the three nations. Now, Trudeau says he talked with Mr. Pence about the ratification process. Back here in the United States, Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley says it will take external pressure to get House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and President Trump to move the USMCA.
I think it would help push our president and Pelosi faster if we could get Canada to approve of it and Mexico to approve of it just as quickly as they can and put more pressure on the Congress of the United States.
That could be a tall order if Canada, holding elections this fall, and Mexico, which now has a new president, sees the United States as getting cold feet. Democrats say they want to get to yes on USMCA, but want stronger teeth in the deal that Canada, Mexico, and the White House are unwilling to change. Here's what National Pork Producers Council President David Herring said after an April legislative fly-in.
We heard mixed emotions. We heard some offices we heard positive, and some other ones we heard we don't know. It's just evidently some sticking points in there that is not getting the deal done.
Pork producers had hoped for a USMCA vote by August, and now that seems uncertain. Mr. Grassley points out that House Democrats kept the U.S.-Colombia trade deal off the House floor for 4 years until a GOP-led Congress took over in 2011. Let's stay with trade for one more story. An analysis from a German bank calls China a more stable trading partner than the United States. Commerce Bank, a self-described international commercial bank with branches and offices in almost 50 countries, announced the report this week. In its study, 61% of the respondents expect a gloomier economic outlook for the next couple of years. The report cites political and economic troubles, assessing China as a more stable trade partner than the United States or Great Britain. The survey polled roughly 2,000 German-based companies, of which just over half were exporters. More than two-thirds of the companies surveyed have a physical presence in the United States. The talks, of course, remain stalled with China after nearly reaching an agreement, and the trade war between the U.S. and China continues to escalate as a result. And finally today, the Environmental Protection Agency is reportedly ready to scrap RIN market reforms as it readies a rule to allow year-round E15 sales. Bloomberg News reports the shift comes as the agency races to meet a May 31 rulemaking deadline. The official summer driving season starts Saturday, leaving little time to announce the rule. The RIN market modifications are part of the same rule allowing year-round E15. However, for the rule to benefit drivers this year, it's thought that the rule must be finalized before the summer driving season. The market reforms would have implemented trading restrictions on RIN credits. While the EPA may be backing off the aggressive RIN market reforms, agency officials will apparently continue to evaluate other market changes requested by President Trump. Year-round E15 sales is a welcome move by the U.S. biofuel industry and corn farmers because it has the potential to increase demand for U.S. ethanol. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Let's check the cash grain situation now with Matt Bennett of AgMarket.net. Hey, Matt, thanks for being with us. How are you today?
Oh, I'm doing well. How are you doing?
No, I'm good. And how much field work did you get done in your part of the world?
Yeah, so a couple of days ago, we were able to roll a little bit there in Shelby County. It was better than what I thought it was going to be, actually. And so we planted till about 1:30 in the morning. We ran out of dry ground. And so, it's the only farm that I had more than a half an inch of rain on. Of course, I got like an inch and a quarter. So who knows if we're going to be redoing it all over again. But that's just the way this spring's going.
Oh, you've got to, it's only money. You got to smile about it, I guess, because
so.
there isn't anything else to do. I know farmers are under a lot of pressure at this point. Any good advice for them as they look to the rest of this marketing year?
You know, it depends on what their situation is on planting. If they've got corn up and it looks pretty decent, you can't ignore prices like this, at least to get some incremental sales. If you haven't been able to sell anything yet, I don't know that I want to sell any cash corn just yet. And I don't know that I want to true hedge anything because while they're saying that this weather pattern is going to change, what if it doesn't? You probably don't want to be in that situation. So I think the only option is potentially maybe buying a put option, something that you're not going to be 100% tied to and you've got a limited amount of risk. So, as far as marketing goes, we got to keep our discipline. Everybody's getting bulled up because we've gone up so much. But at the same time, we need to be looking at these prices. There's some really good opportunities.
All right. Hey, thanks so much. And we'll talk with you more during our Commodity Week recording this afternoon.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. That's Matt Bennett. He's with Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois. On this Thursday afternoon, let's check in with Mike Tenura. He's at T-Storm Weather in Chicago. Let's start, Mike, with the weather forecast. Is it any better than it has been as it relates to rainfall across the Midwest?
Well, we're not going to see as much rain as we've seen, but the bigger problem is that it's still going to rain. We'll see some showers around this afternoon. We'll see higher coverage of scattered showers and storms tomorrow night and Saturday. And then we'll start to see more storms again Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday of next week. Now, it's not going to rain the whole time, and the rains will be less frequent than they have been. But again, the point is that we're still going to be seeing rain. If we look at soil moisture across the U.S. corn production belt and weight it by county and by different periods of time, no matter how we look at it, it's the wettest it's been of the entire spring as of right now. And that's because it was raining a lot leading into the last week or so, and then we got dumped on. So we need it completely dry going forward, and that's just not going to happen.
I've been getting some questions from listeners about what the summer and the fall might look like. I know they're probably worried about heat. They might be worried about frost dates. Do you have any information on comparison years, what this year we've had so far might mean for the coming weather forecasts?
Well, you need to keep a couple of different things in mind. And number one is that weather right now does not highly correlate to weather later on in the summer. So even though it's real wet and it's been real wet, it just doesn't give us a super strong clue of what's about to come up. But that being said, you do need to keep a couple of different things in mind. Number one is that this type of scenario has been followed by heat waves a number of times going back in history. I can just isolate out some years here, and we'll start out basically going back to 1895. And just since the modern corn and soybean era started in 1960, these are some of the years here that started out real wet, kind of like we have now, and then ended up with a big heat wave. 1974, 1983, 1991, 1995, 2010, and 2011. And the way we figured this out is we looked at the wettest years by starting in June and then going through May. The reason we did that is because this June through May will completely crush records for the wettest period of the last 125 years across the seven-state region of the Corn Belt. So it's not for certain that we're going to see a significant heat wave later on this summer, but you can't say it would be totally surprising just based on some of these statistics. Now, keep one other thing in mind, Todd. Not every year did that. I mean, there were other years that didn't do that, but some did, clearly, so you have to watch it.
Yeah, so that's something we'll have to keep an eye on, and I know you'll be watching for us as we make our way through the rest of the summer. I take it there's probably not much relationship, as you already noted, to the fall frost dates.
Yes, well, that is true, but keep this in mind. Number one, 1974 and 1995 both did have significant freezes in September, and those were, again, followed by not only very wet beginnings to the season, very hot summers, and then a freeze early. So you have to watch that. But I think the bigger thing to worry about related to frost is just that with this corn crop being planted so late, you're going to push the development of it into the frost periods in September and especially in October. So there is a much higher risk for a frost on an immature corn crop later on in October. But that's primarily a function of planting date as opposed to some larger weather issue.
Hey, thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Mike Tenora is with T-Storm Weather. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.